Welcome to How We Got There. I am your host, Mike Davis, founder of Go-To-Market Guides. I interview thought leaders and founders in the Salesforce ecosystem to help ISVs learn new things to try and mistakes to avoid. This episode of How We Got There is brought to you by ISV App. ISV App is used by leading Salesforce ISVs and OEMs as the central toolbox to reduce churn, increase renewals, identify upsell potential, and close more deals. ISV App is the only plug-and-play solution for the AppExchange App Analytics API and provides deep product insights. The setup is easy and takes less than 5 minutes. Visit isvapp.com, that's isvapp.com, to learn how you can take advantage of usage data in your app today. All right, I am here with Ari Truhoft, and he is the COO of Litify. Ari, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me, Mike.
So as COO of Litify, maybe you just start out by sharing a little bit about how you found your way into the ecosystem and what is it that Litify does?
Sure. So I have a background in vertical SaaS. I actually spent about 7 years working for a SaaS business that serviced private equity firms and hedge funds in the kind of fintech space. And it was a front office tool used mainly for CRM and marketing. And we used to like to tell ourselves that we competed with Salesforce. There's an ISV, I forget the name of the ISV that used to go up against us in deal cycles. And I'd come to really respect and appreciate what that other business was doing. We also, a couple of times, migrated clients off of Salesforce. And I was always just enamored with the product. Again, our product was like an on-premise application. It's funny, like we used to actually even sell it like as a value prop, like you don't want your data in the cloud, like you want to keep control of it. Imagine that 10 years ago, but really very enamored with the product and the platform. And a friend of mine who I hadn't spoken to in quite some time, he was running this large law firm and he was working on a massive Salesforce implementation. And he called me and asked me if I wanted to join him, help get this massive law firm live on the Salesforce platform. And I did. And I spent about 2 years at this firm. This implementation that we built custom for this firm, we ended up rolling it, spinning it off as a separate business. That business is called Litify. And we started selling that, this kind of operating system for lawyers, for law firms, started selling it to other law firms. And the rest is kind of history. The question that everybody always asks me is, like, what made you guys decide to adopt Salesforce as a platform? And what made you even think you can build this operating system for law firms on the Salesforce platform? And really what it boiled down to is within legal, that's the category, the vertical that we service, it's really one of the like only of the Titan industries that has resisted adopting like best in class technology. And most of the technology in that vertical are point solutions that were built to solve very specific problems. So like lawyers, they think of themselves as snowflakes and they're specialists in their craft and what they do because every client they have is different and every jurisdiction that they work in is different and every case is different. And because of that, the technology historically has been built to be incredibly specialized. What that means is if you're a multifaceted organization, a legal organization, you probably have 20 or 50 different pieces of technology that are all completely disconnected. And we saw Salesforce as this unifying platform that was incredibly extensible, that we'd be able to get a law firm, or whether it's a law firm or a corporate legal department, which those are entities that we also service, get them on the platform and connect all of the different functions that they do to a single platform to give transparency, extensibility, and ultimately scale to organizations that have never had it before. So that's what Litify is. That's how I got introduced to this universe, and it's been a wild couple of years.
Yeah, I'll say, and I think you mentioned it a little bit, but for a while, Salesforce was trying to bucket partners, software partners, as either ISV Force or OEM. But I know Litify is both. Can you share a little bit about the reasons why you decided to go both paths there?
Yeah, I think it's primarily around industry alignment and the infancy of technology in legal. No law firm has ever heard of Salesforce. Just imagine that. Like it's 2022. And unless you're like an AM law firm, like the big, large, white shoe organizations that you might have heard about in the news, like these smaller, mid-size, or even large firms, like organizations that are hundreds of employees, like they have no idea what Salesforce is. There's no reason to create a sales cycle or a buying process that introduces multiple parties. So for us, it's really quite simple. We talk to a law firm. We sell them Litify as an OEM solution. They get the power of the platform. Nobody on the Salesforce sales team or go-to-market teams needs to actually interact with that customer. Obviously, they get cha-ching, as we call it, on an OEM purchase, but it's just an easy opportunity for us. And it's a good go-to-market for Salesforce in that once these law firms are on the platform, Salesforce then has the opportunity to sell them additional products and services like sandboxes or storage or Einstein Analytics or Marketing Cloud. And we've had actually quite a few of our OEM customers. We've gone to market together with Salesforce on our OEM customers, and they've been able to successfully close Marketing Cloud deals. The ISV force play for us is in other industries that Salesforce already has penetration. So we've sold to nonprofit government entities, as I mentioned, corporate legal departments. If you're a Fortune 500 company, I think the stat is like 97% of the Fortune 500 has Salesforce somewhere within their organization. We can, you know, piggyback off of that existing relationship, existing value of the platform within the organization, whether it's people using the platform, people supporting the platform, or the organization having already gotten comfortable from a security or InfoSec perspective with the Salesforce platform to easily sell in as an ISV to this kind of white space within these businesses. So it's really on our go-to-market. It's where Salesforce doesn't have any penetration, we'll go in as an OEM, and where they do, we'll happily partner and sell as an ISV.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. If they already have a footprint with Salesforce, ISV force. If they don't, OEM. As simple as that.
It took a couple of years to figure that out, but there was some stepping on toes.
It's so easy when you say it as a sentence, but yeah, there you go. It takes some learning. But yeah, as an OEM, what have you learned from some of the other large OEMs out there, like the Encinos and Vivas and even Velocities of the world?
Yeah, those are all really fantastic businesses. What Veeva's been able to do is really not just a OEM visionary and leader, but really when you think about very successful vertical SaaS businesses entirely, just like a really phenomenal business. We actually have a number of ex-Veeva employees here. We have a number of Encino folks also. And we've learned a lot from those businesses. The entire SI implementation model and how to structure your services to align with your sales team and your customer successes team's incentives and success. That's like a big thing that we had to cut our teeth on initially and ultimately learn best practices from those organizations. Also, one of our advisory board members is a fellow named Jeff, who is the former CFO, who's like a close friend and confidant who's helped us not just learn some of the lessons that he had learned on the success side, but also as relating to how to structure a mutually beneficial relationship with all the different stakeholders at Salesforce and other ISV. We've definitely learned a lot, and we're super grateful that there are all these really best-in-class organizations that have blazed this trail before us.
As you mentioned SIs, your system integrator strategy, I think that's one of the key benefits of the Salesforce ecosystem. There's over 1,900 registered, from small two guys in a garage or gals in a garage, all the way up to the Accentures and Deloittes of the world. What have been some of your learnings to share around that SI program?
I think the first thing is you nailed it. Like, there are so many and they all want business. And if they're a small SI, like most small businesses, they will tell you that they can do anything. And the number one lesson for us is really choosing the right partners, even if it means investing in those partners on your own. Like I see a lot of ISVs or OEMs or any vertical SaaS business or any SaaS business that has a hire on their implementations. Like, they're just trying to find the quickest path to success sometimes that doesn't cost the most money. And we've been in relationships that were incredibly successful. We've had relationships that we realized very quickly that were going to work. So I think number one is know the systems integrator that you're working with. If you're, you know, blessed enough to be working with a GSI, like, that's fantastic. If you're a smaller shop, and you have to start by aligning yourselves with smaller SIs that might be two people in a basement. Get to know the people. Make sure they align with your values of customer success. Make sure there's skin in the game on both sides for customers. And then ultimately, I think you'll weed down that 18,000 list to the handful of partners that you feel really comfortable like going to market with, feel really comfortable entrusting your customer success with. And I have partners right now that if I'm like getting on the phone with a potential investor, like I would ask our investors to speak to some of implementation partners. Like they're the people I trust, honestly, like outside of our existing business and employees and board, like they're the people I trust the most. Like we've been in the trenches together. We've seen the customer success. We've been through failures together. Like those are the people that you're going to spend the most time with that are need to be the most aligned to the success of your customers.
Yeah. And a thing you said there was just a handful. And that's all you need. Like when you're looking at the huge list, it can be daunting. But then you're going to have to trial and error and figure out who you can trust and who has a symbiotic relationship with you and the client. But yeah, at the end of the day, you don't need a lot. You just need to find a handful that are really high quality.
Yeah, I think people also like they get panicked about capacity. Like we need to have enough bench. And they start going wide instead of going deep, meaning they're like, okay, we need to have 15, 20 SIs on the bench where if you just pick like a few and you really invest in their success, like you roll out a really great enablement and training program, a certification program, you give them the templates they need to be able to ultimately run a successful business off of your business. Like they're going to invest in your program. They're going to start hiring more people. Like you got to think about it that way. I need to invest in these relationships. They're not just like service providers for me to have just so I can attain my own success. It's got to be like a win-win relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Ari, what are you most proud of from building Litify?
I don't know. It's tough. Like you're in the trenches every day. You just see all the issues that need to be fixed. There's a lot to be proud of, though. I think what I'm most proud of is that we've been able to provide a product and a service to an industry that had gone unnoticed or almost ignored within the Salesforce ecosystem. There is no legal vertical within Salesforce. It's funny, in fact, like if you go to a rep on the core team and just like open up their patch, like you'll find law firms like next to like, I don't know, a car washes. Like it's just like these small businesses that are inside these patches that Salesforce hasn't really successfully been able to sell to all. Like they've sold some AmLaw deals, Marketing Cloud, or maybe Sales Cloud. Being able to take this amazing technology and get it to customers that really need it has been really just amazing. And there are a lot of other things that I'm definitely proud of, but that's probably number one.
Nice. And on the flip side, what's been the biggest mistake along the way?
Mistake. I think the our initial foray into implementations, when we started, we built an internal implementation team. And we thought we could do it all ourselves. So we built out our own ProServe team. Our sales team started picking up steam. We sold a lot of deals and we had like a logjam where we couldn't get customers live successfully in a reasonable amount of time. And we had this backlog of customers that were waiting like to even start their product. And we did something really dramatic to try and solve that problem. This is probably about 2-3 years ago. We called it Project Delta. You ever fly Delta Airlines? You know how you're always delayed on Delta? So we said, hey, we're never going to pull ourselves out of this unless we do something like really dramatic. And we were small enough at the time where we didn't see like a tremendous amount of risk. We literally called up customers that we had sold to and we told them, I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to start your project for about 2-3 months. And these customers, what are you talking about? And we said, look, we're trying to make sure that our customers, all of our customers get live successfully. The last thing we want to do is start your project and then have to pause or have a resource constraint. We took that time and worked with the SIs that we had already started working with, getting them ramped up so that once we were comfortable, we could get all of those customers aligned with those project teams. And it was a very difficult decision that we made, but it was one of the best decisions we ever, because it forced us to get our ProServe together, really invest in an SI program. So I'm glad we learned that lesson. We learned it a couple of years ago, and we're still learning a lot, but that was probably like the initial mistake, I would say.
Good. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's just an important thing for folks to hear. You're a software company. You build software. You service software. You don't need to be the people who deliver it to have a successful business. On the go-to-market standpoint, what's been your top producing lead source, maybe over the years and then more recently?
Yeah. So on the OEM side, we really just, it's our own internal business development efforts and the SIs that we work with. And we work with many SIs that focus on our industry. So they have relationships already. So it's like a really fantastic go-to-market on the law firm side. On the corporate and government side, it's really been Salesforce. Again, that our ISV force go-to-market, working with our ISV partner team, working with the RVPs, the AEs, identifying targets, co-selling, really investing in those motions has paid fantastic dividends for us.
Nice. And you touched on a little bit of around the SIs. The most important thing for them is obviously consistent statements of work that and software that works. But what's your opinion? What's your program look like from an incentivization standpoint for them to refer you business?
Yeah, we go back and forth on that all the time. Is it a standard referral agreement? Because they're doing the services work, are they already incentivized on the co-sell? And I think we've generally just adopted a standard referral program across the board. We obviously like want our partners to be successful. We want to incentivize them to continue to do business with us and do good work for us. And we didn't feel it made sense to penalize them because they're also doing our services work. That's been our philosophy, but I wouldn't be lying if I said we haven't like gone back and forth on this a couple of times, and there's no way to predict what the future might bring also. So we'll continue to evaluate and kind of, you know, decide what to do as we continue to grow.
Nice. Switching gears just to fundraising a little bit and how you think about it. I saw that you raised your Series A pre-pandemic in 2019 from Tiger Global. What's next? Can you share a little bit about that experience and then where you're going on that front?
Yeah, so we're still growing as a business. We're about 200 employees now, about 300 customers, large enterprise customers, and we're growing at a pretty significant rate. So we're always obviously looking for opportunities to continue and further that growth. The experience in Tiger was fantastic. They're a great partner. They've been there both from a capital perspective, a support perspective, helping us open certain markets, helping us by introducing us to either partners or potential employees. And that's as we continue on. That's the type of partner we like to do business with. And we've had conversations with a few potential partners. We're not under the gun right now to make a move, and we're capitalized, so we don't need to do a round right now. But we're always obviously going to be opportunistic. And if we see an opportunity to really expand our scale and growth to deliver our product to more and more customers quicker, we'll definitely do that.
Got it. And just general advice from where you're sitting, what do you think every ISV should do this month, this year, take whatever time horizon you want?
Yeah, I think you got to figure out who within the ecosystem shares the same incentives that you share. We've tried to go to market with many other ISV partners. And until you like really find the right channel, whether it's an ISV partner, whether it's a specific team or vertical team at Salesforce, whether it's that SI that the incentives align perfectly. When you find like the right channel, the right partner, and you really focus on it, magic happens. I follow Jason Lemkin on LinkedIn, on Twitter. He runs Saster. He's fantastic. I would, you know, highly suggest anybody within this space, or if you happen to be listening to this and you're not in the Salesforce ecosystem, to follow him. And his one of his lines that really resonates with me is he goes through like which marketing channel is the best marketing channel. He says whichever one you're doing well. And if you choose one channel and you just focus, you'll see success. Because if you're really good at outbound, or you're really good at digital, or you're really good at organic, like if you just focus on that channel, ultimately you'll see success come through. If you're devoted, if you're detail oriented, and you the incentives that you have align with the efforts that you're making, I would just strongly suggest you another organization, another partner, or another employee that works for one of those organizations that you can go to market with that has incentives that align with yours, and you'll see success if you really focus on it.
Yeah, I get this theme from you coming through clearly. It's an experimentation with focus, and then knowing, being able to focus enough to know when something's working or not. From an experimentation standpoint, because it sounds like you figured out some channels from Jason Limkin's advice, can you talk a little bit about like how you do that experimentation with new programs or any sort of insight on how you track success?
Yeah, what you probably first want to do. So let's say we're talking about marketing, where your customers might find you, and there might be a variety of different places, and you experiment. You start by going to where they are in person, or you call them, or you email them, or you buy advertising on the websites that they go to, or you buy keywords, and you don't do 1,000 of them at once. You do 4 or 5 of them at once. You only do the total number of things at once that will allow you to actually track the results. And if you marketing ops in this scenario is like really key to be able to set the benchmarks and the KPIs so that you're actually measuring the success, and you experiment for a small period of time. And once you see that one or maybe two of them are delivering some form of results, you ignore the rest of them. Again, if you're a large organization, you're probably not ignoring. You have big teams and now they're focusing on those pieces. But if you're a small organization, you just find the one or two things that you've figured out and then you just try to get better at them. So if you're doing outbound email, just try to figure out how to write the perfect message that's going to catch people's attention. If you're cold calling, like work on your script and just come up with the best possible script. If you're doing digital ads on Google, like figure out the best CPA on specific terms and just double down on that. It's casting as wide of a net that you can still be effective, but not too wide of a net where then you're just like grasping for things.
Makes sense. Ari, we're going to wrap up here with the final three rapid fire questions, 10 second answers. Are you ready to go?
Ready to roll.
Who is one company or person in the ecosystem that you track or follow?
Obviously, Mark Benioff, but I also am a big fan of Nick at Gainsight.
Nice. What would you tell yourself day one of working in the ecosystem?
Buckle up.
Buckle up and don't start a services org. And lastly, what gives you energy in your personal life?
I have 4 kids and a 5th on the way. Spending time with my kids, being able to disconnect from this kind of excitement and spend time with that excitement gives me the energy.
Congratulations on the 5th. Ari, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
Thank you for listening, and I hope you learned something from today's episode of How We Got There. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe on iTunes and leave a review. I'll see you here next time.